From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in an online fitness class with a takeout cocktail and in a so-called ghost kitchen. These are just some of the creative ideas small business owners have implemented to stay afloat during the pandemic. The restaurant industry has been hit particularly hard. As you may have heard during a recent conversation on this show, the New York Restaurant Association reports that nearly two-thirds of restaurants in the state could close by the end of the year unless there's some kind of additional government support. Those that are hunkering down for the winter months are exploring options like greenhouses, plastic igloos, and new takeout options to keep business going. Fears of a possible second wave and shutdown are on the minds of many business owners who rely on in-person interaction. What kind of ideas do they have? What kinds of support from the government would they like to see? In recent days, President Trump has stated he is not going to negotiate a stimulus package until after the election. There's a lot to talk about here. This hour, we're joined by three local small business owners to hear how they've adapted to the pandemic so far. And we're going to ask them to do something that, as you'll hear me say a couple times this hour, it's a little kitschy, but we're going to ask them to grade the state and federal response to the business community. It's important to hear their perspective on this, and let's welcome them now. Kelly Metris is the owner of Selena's Mexican Restaurant and Knox, co-chair of Bossy, and board member for the Rochester chapter of the New York State Restaurant Association. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
What is Bossy?
Bossy is actually a women's business owner support group.
All right. Kevin McCann is with us, the owner of McCann's Local Meats, back on the program. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, you know, I guess we'll find out at the end of the program. I want to hear how you're doing. And we were going to welcome Colin Coffey, the owner of Renewing Massage, who has had some of the most pointed comments on this program going back to the spring for government. But we're actually going to start with Colin. He happily got booked up for the afternoon, couldn't join us live, but recorded a short conversation with us. And we're going to have that for you right now.
Thank you, Evan. Nice to hear your voice.
Well, why don't you remind our listeners what it is that you do, what your business is all about?
I am a licensed massage therapist. I've been in business in Rochester for 12 years, and we have a building in the South Wedge where there is another massage therapist and now two psychotherapists. So I'm a landlord and I'm a small business owner.
In the spring, I would say that your commentary about how government was handling the pandemic was blistering, and appropriately so. And so let's talk now in October, and usually this is kind of kitschy, but I think this will be instructive. I want you to grade the federal and the state governments for how they have responded. Let's start on the state level. What grade do you give New York State for responding to the pandemic?
C-.
Okay, can you elaborate?
Unemployment benefits to the self-employed should have gone out within a month, not 3-4 months. I think the response to COVID-19 has developed and improved, but we still haven't seen a real recognition of the costs of increasing unemployment massively and not having appropriate supports. For example, City of Rochester has a 16% unemployment rate. That's more than double Pittsford. We're not all in the same boat in the same storm. Some of us are in yachts and some of us are in dinghies.
Okay. What about the federal government?
The federal government would again get C- to D because all the underlying problems are still there. We don't have capacity to deal with surges in hospitalizations, which may hit us in the winter. We still don't have a benefits package to help state and local governments or individuals. And we need to rehire 538 educators in the city of Rochester.
Now, when it comes to your own business and the way that you're looking at the winter, what do you need most from government at any level right now?
I think that we need financial supports for the unemployed. I think there's a terrible problem building with food insecurity. I think we're going to have to, as individuals, donate more to organizations like FoodLink. We need unemployment assistance for the benefits, and we also need to invest in the schools so that we don't have people getting cabin fever and not having enough food. We also have a problem with looming evictions, and we really have to get a handle on this.
You told us, Colin, back in the spring that what government ought to have done right away when the pandemic hit and a lot of the close down was happening was to essentially freeze mortgage and rent payments and freeze even credit card payments because, as you said back then, if government is telling you don't work, stay home, or you can't work, then government needs to say you don't have to pay your bills for the moment. We're going to pause the economy. Do you feel any differently now? Have your feelings evolved? And do you think, looking back, that your diagnosis on what government should have done was correct?
I still think that for people who are unemployed, and I think the response to COVID-19 has impacted people very differently based on race and class. So people who are well off and white and can work remotely don't need any support at this particular time. If you're bringing in two incomes, you're working online, and your kids are going to school in person full-time or part-time, you don't really need any support. But for people who are working class and people who live in the cities who've lost their jobs, like the City of Rochester educators cafeteria and canteen staff and janitors and support staff, not having unemployment and still having to pay your mortgage in, credit cards, student loans, so on and so forth, and feed your kids, you can't do that on unemployment.
Do you have concerns about your own business surviving the winter and into next year?
We recently released. We have two psychotherapists. We have two massage therapists. I think as we can limp along, and we've saved money, and our debt is relatively low, and we're very fortunate to be in that position. But other people going into this storm are in much worse situations. So I think we will limp along, and we'll get through this. But for other people in the City of Rochester, the situation is dire.
What would you estimate your business is? I assume it's not where it was a year ago. Can you give us an estimate for how much you're down for the year?
I would say we're about 60% down. And plus, for 3 months, we cut rent payments by 2/3 and took only 1/3 rent from our commercial tenants, which we allowed them to take out of their security deposit. So we've sustained considerable losses. A lot of businesses in the South Wedge are not reopening or reopening in a very, very small way. And whether that's sustainable, whether those restaurants, coffee shops can stay open with hardly any people going in compared to what it was a year ago, that's a big question.
Yeah, yours was one of the later businesses that was permitted to reopen in a limited capacity. Do you think that the way businesses have been allowed to reopen, and by that I mean in phases with limitations on indoor capacity, et cetera, does that make sense to you or should that change?
I think that it's very difficult to know. This is like being asked to commentate on the result of a football match that is only 20 minutes into the game. We can all make forecasts, and it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, analyst. But I do think that there are lessons to be learned. And I think the most important thing is that to build a capacity to deal in our medical system with any potential surges in infections and hospitalizations. In April, I was looking at the figures, there was 102 people in hospital and 23 of those were in ICU. And now that figure is, I think, 23 people in hospital and 6 in an ICU. if those numbers go up, we need to have the capacity to be able to scale up and support those people. So until we have a vaccine or a cure, it's very difficult to predict what exactly is the right course.
Let me close by asking you about our political leaders. You were very critical of them, of both major parties at all levels of government this past spring when we talked. And I'm asking you this not as sort of teeing up a softball for you, but I just want to ask you honestly, in the intervening months, do you feel that they have demonstrated, whether it's at state level, federal level, Republicans, Democrats, have they demonstrated a desire to really understand the challenges facing small businesses? Do you think your elected leaders understand what you're going through?
I don't know, largely because I think that our political leaders and the leaders in the medical establishment are very divorced from large sections of our community. So, you know, small businesses don't live in a vacuum. If you're firing hundreds and hundreds of teachers in the school district and taking their health care, because when you lose your job in the United States, that means your health care is also going. Not understanding that we, you know, you can't switch on unemployment benefits and then switch them off again. It's a very insecure situation. And I think many of your listeners are disconnected and generationally disconnected from that financial insecurity and looking at the realities of what America's big cities are dealing with in the response to COVID-19. So, you know, my major criticism would be, people have got to get out of their bunkers and get out of their silos and realize that you can't keep chanting we're all in this together when you're not looking at the whole picture. And I think, you know, the response to COVID-19 continues to be not a broad perspective, not an international perspective either. It's a very insular way of looking at things. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful there will be a cure. I'm hopeful that there will be a vaccine. And I'm hopeful that we will rebuild after this. But, you know, the storm is still coming.
That's Colin Coffey, the owner of Renewing Massage. With his grades for the state and the feds, a C- for New York State, C- to D for the feds. All right, Kelly Metris, the owner of Selena's Mexican Restaurant and Knox, and a board member of the Rochester chapter of the New York State Restaurant Association. Let's do it on the New York State side. What's your grade for the state so far?
Honestly, I grade the state fairly highly. Personally, we've been through really awful financial times and catastrophes in the past, and this is the first, as a business owner, we've ever gotten assistance. We've always had to do it ourselves and figure it out, which always meant taking out, you know, massive debt. So between the different loans and the grants, the availability of unemployment and PUI for officers and business owners, super not expected, but not having to worry about how I was going to pay for groceries and make my mortgage payment while trying to figure out my business was huge. And I think that was a driving force behind New York State. And I know in other states, they didn't have the same outcomes. So I rated a little bit higher.
Well, wow. Okay. So what's the grade?
I would give it a B plus.
Okay.
I mean, nobody's perfect.
How about the feds?
The feds, it's a mess. I think in the beginning they had really quick responses, even though it took some time to get the money out, but now it shouldn't be politicized. This is people's well-beings and safety. This is their homes and their children's food. And, you know, if they could act instead of arguing, I think that the country would be a better place in
the
pandemic.
All right, so you're going to give them a lower grade. What's the?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like a D, and that's across the board, both sides.
Well, that's tough. And let me read a comment before I turn to Kevin, Kelly. Todd writes to say, Evan, as a purveyor in the bar, restaurant, and entertainment industry, the state government has really been the worst, whether it be the SLA, the health department, or the governor's office, banning darts and pool while bowling and casino games can happen is infuriating. So he says the inconsistency gets an F from him. Banning darts and pool while bowling and casino games can happen is infuriating. What do you think, Kelly?
I see the frustrations. We've had to rewrite our business plan daily in the beginning, trying to figure out what you can touch and what you can't touch and where people can go and where they can't go. The bar industry is a whole separate level of, you know, the entertainment side of things, right? Playing pool and darts with your friends. But I think that the problem isn't the mandates, it's the follow through. I think in the beginning, if things were just followed through instead of added on, it wouldn't have gotten so nitpicky. I think that when people weren't following the guidelines, they should have gotten shut down. And then maybe we could have all been in a better place now, and they wouldn't be worried about things such as darts and pool, and that would have never even come up.
All right. Well, we'll talk to Kelly in a moment about maybe where she would make changes or where the opportunity is to help going forward. Kevin McCann, the owner of McCann's Local Meats, what's your grade for New York State?
I'm going to give him either a C-plus or a B-minus. I think that a lot of the mandates that have come down I've been very happy with the way that they have tried to quarantine the state and deal with stopping the spread of the virus as a whole. But as they have reopened certain industries, some of the technicalities of how they want things done seem to contradict each other, don't necessarily, to me, have like a logical thought process to them.
What's an example?
You know, just as the idea that you can sit at a bar, for instance, and take your mask off and enjoy a drink while you're eating some food. But if you don't want to sit, you'd rather stand up and lean against that bar, now you have to put your mask on. I'm all for safety and mask wearing, but that to me seems a little contradictory. I would agree with what was said earlier about, you know, darts and pool not being okay versus, you know, bowling alleys and strip clubs being okay. Just some sticky spots there where the people who think that this is all a conspiracy and who are getting this fatigue over trying to do the right thing, that's where they start to have talking points.
And Kevin, in regards to that inconsistency that you see, do you feel like realistically early in a pandemic, there's inevitably going to be some inconsistency or some spots that maybe the state will take a look at with time and say, okay, we got this wrong, we're going to fix it. Do you think it's been enough time to fix those inconsistencies now?
You know, that's really tough to say. The job that they had in front of them was enormous and unprecedented. And I think that they were doing the best that they could figure out how to do with the given information that they had at the time, which was ever evolving, still evolving, you know. So while I find it some of the things, like I said, a little confusing and a little unfortunate, I'm not going to condemn them for having to make a choice, right? Like, they made a choice, so.
Okay, and so it's C plus to B minus for the state. What about the feds?
I'm going to stick right in that C plus range. Again, I specifically for our industry, I just don't think that enough thought has been put into food, hospitality, and all industries that sort of encompass that. You know, the large percentage of the workforce in this country that are employed and engaged in these activities, and the way that they're all, you know, sort of in limbo right now. And I wish that the federal government had given as much thorough care to stopping spread, making nationwide mandates, working with local governors to come up with a comprehensive plan coast to coast, that we could be in a better place than we are right now.
Kevin, do you see government at just about every level doing enough to allow for creativity. Let me go ahead and read some of the creative solutions we've seen across the state, and then we'll ask both of our guests about this. In Buffalo, a restaurant called Tapo is building 10 greenhouses outside. The structures are weatherproof and retain warmth. They fit up to 8 people from the same party. There are some building plastic igloos or even yurts. In New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio made a popular outdoor dining program permanent that had been scheduled to end at the end of this month. It's called the Open Restaurants Program. It's allowed more than 10,000 restaurants citywide to offer outdoor dining by setting up tables on the sidewalks, in the streets, and in other public spaces. Restaurants are going to be allowed to use propane heaters on the sidewalks to keep customers warm as the weather changes. The heaters have been prohibited for use in restaurants, but they're trying to open up that as an option as well. The Washington Post reports on so-called ghost kitchens or dark kitchens, virtual restaurants, cloud kitchens, urban warehouses containing multiple small kitchens leased by a restaurant or restaurant subcontractor for delivery only, and orders are often delivered by third-party aggregators such as DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub. Sometimes restaurant companies launch a virtual brand as a trial balloon, a time-limited digital-only test run of a concept under consideration for a future bricks-and-mortar restaurant. And they're doing a lot more of this right now to see if it works and if people want that. Those are just some of the examples. And one of the things that you and I talked about, Pat, last spring was this has to become a culture during the pandemic where government's instinct is to say yes quickly and then maybe figure out if they said yes too often as opposed to no too often. How did you see that playing out maybe this summer, and how do you see it going forward?
You know, in general, from a local level, you saw programs like that as well. Restaurants that were allowed to create outdoor spaces in, you know, on property that wasn't theirs, that was city property, on sidewalks, in streets. And you saw some people taking advantage of those things. You saw the SLA allowing for a little bit looser sale of alcohol in many different ways across the state. And I know that was a pretty solid lifeline to a lot of businesses. But, you know, I think that in general, that's in this industry, if you're not able to think on the fly and adapt and keep things fluid, keep it liquid, you know, be like water, take the shape of what you're in. If you can't do that, then, you know, pandemic or not, you're going to have problems.
Do you think right now that if you or your colleagues come up with an idea that is way out of the box, you're likely to get a yes or a no right now?
I think, again, locally, from, you know, city allowances, I think it's more likely a yes. My interactions with, you know, getting grants and loans and things like that through the city has been nothing but positive throughout this entire process. So I would think that the city as a whole is going to look for ways to make it easier for businesses.
Talking to Kevin McCann, owner of McCann's Local Meats, Kelly Metris, the owner of Selena's Mexican Restaurant, and Knox. We heard from Colin Coffey, the owner of Renewing Massage, asking them to grade the state and federal response to the pandemic for businesses, and then asking, as we go forward, what do you need next? And Colin mentioned he's down about maybe 50 to 60% in business for the year. That's a huge hit. Kevin, is there an estimate for you on how McCann's has done? Is that something you can share?
I mean, I'd say we're probably 40% down. You know, missing 10 straight weeks certainly didn't help. The unsure nature of what people are experiencing right now with getting kids back to school and so on and so forth. A lot of the business that we would have seen from University of Rochester just isn't there. And we're actually even more concerned, not just from a restaurant perspective going into these colder months and losing out on the patio seating that we have. We're also looking towards the holidays, and as a retail institution as well, the way that family holidays are going to be different this year because of the pandemic. And potentially missing out on a really large chunk of what we would normally do in what is our busiest and critical time of sales for us to round out the year.
Kelly, how have you done in terms of percentage year to year?
On the 6 months of COVID so far, we were down 65% in revenue. Now that we're fully open, whereas, you know, we were closed for the 2 months, we are running about 30% down from normal. Not having that bar service on Friday and Saturday night is a huge hit for us. You know, we're doing okay on our dine-in sales and our curbside sales, but, you know, hanging out after work with your friends and leaning against the bar, having your drinks, is a huge chunk of our revenue.
Do you think politicians, elected leaders at all levels, understand what you're going through, Kelly?
Not at all. I think that in Washington, they thought that $600 wasn't going to be a huge impact on people's lives. And I think that that is showcased by how that system really negatively affected a lot of our staffing. You're allowing that extra money to sit home when you're making 14, 15 bucks an hour in a kitchen. You know, it's hard work, and then you get $600 to stay home. You don't want to go back to work, you know, and that ended, but there's still that overlying mental state of COVID and that depression that all of us are fighting a little bit that still sits there. Why would I go back to work when I can get unemployment? And they're talking about bringing the PUI back.
Kevin McCann, do you think elected leaders at all levels understand what you're going through?
Not in this industry, no. I think that the National Restaurant Association and the chapter here in Rochester specifically have done a really spectacular job trying to advocate for everyone in this industry and, you know, not just the business owners, but also, you know, the people who work for us and trying to find an equitable solution that is good for the business owner to be able to stay open, but also good for, you know, our staff to be able to A, feel safe while they're at work, but also B, be able to keep a lucrative, you know, employment opportunity. But, you know, no, I you know, we had a state senator on with a couple of Zoom meetings that we did, and he got it because he owns a bed and breakfast and a restaurant. But in general, no. When we had other Zoom meetings with elected officials higher up the food chain, I did not get a sense that they had any clue what was going on.
Do you think they want to? Do you think they care?
I hope so, because, like I said, there's a really large percentage of this population in this city and across this country that A, own hospitality businesses, and B, people that work for those hospitality businesses, that if a large percentage of them go away, then we have a much larger issue across this country.
Well, in our second half hour, we're going to ask Kevin and Kelly what the state and the federal government could do to raise their grades. Their grades for New York State, Kelly, a little more optimistic about what the state has done. B+ from her. The federal government, a D. Kevin, C+ for both New York State and the federal government. Colin Coffey, who joined us earlier, C- for the state, C- to D for the federal government. These are not great performances from elected leaders during a crisis, and I think our guests are pretty reasonable. They know this wasn't easy. There wasn't sort of a playbook for what to do, but the question now is 6-7 months in and looking at a very hard winter, what comes next? So let's come right back, and we're going to talk about how they can raise those grades and what businesses need from the government next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections. There's been a lot of talk about personality and insults and shouting matches and the debates. We're talking about policy on Friday. Reducing poverty, and specifically reducing child poverty. The Biden-Harris campaign is out with a new set of 3 proposals. Can they work? We're going to talk about them Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Checking in as we do regularly with the business community about how things are going, what their needs are, their frankly, We're just being blunt. Their odds of surviving this pandemic and getting to the other side. Mike writes to us to ask, Evan, can you ask your guests if they fear there's no end game to this? Our own curve has been flattened, and there are no signs of things being any different this time next year, at least not in New York State. Kelly, does it feel like there's no end game to this and that, you know, you're trying to kind of feel your way through this, not knowing when things might shift?
I feel like we are all trying to plan for the future, right, which is what we do as business owners, and that creativity that we thrive on is somewhat halted because there is no A, B, C happens, then D happens, you know, and that's what our goal is. But we, our society has lived through pandemics before. They're going to go away. I'm not comfortable saying that our curve is flattened yet because we are not even, I mean, we're just starting the winter months. We're just starting the indoor season. I can't even say like, okay, we'll just open up my restaurant because people don't want to be sitting that close together. They don't want to be inside yet. Like, just because the curve's down doesn't mean people are comfortable and don't want to spend money, might not have money to spend. But I'm also optimistic. I think that by next summer, I think you're going to see things changing, hopefully for the better. I think that, you know, as numbers stay down, if we can get through this winter without having a second surge and businesses getting shut down again, then we can all start being comfortable actually planning for that next level.
Okay. Kevin McCann, do you have a concern that there's no end game to this?
Well, I feel that concern when I have customers that come in and, you know, the very common thing that they say is, I just can't wait to get back to normal. And, you know, and then they say, well, maybe that'll happen right after the election, or maybe this vaccine will come out here in the fall or winter, and we'll be able to, 2021 hits and we're right back. And, I'm more concerned about people getting their hopes up about this being a short-term fix and less concerned about having to continue to take very reasonable steps to try to keep everybody around me safe. But, you know, I think we'll find a way to limp along as a business. But if there's a second resurgence, if there's a second shutdown, if there is any of those things, that is going to be far more devastating than somebody being upset about having to take some reasonable precautions.
Okay. Tim writes to us from Bloomfield to say, the federal government gets a better grade from me than the state. Let's say a C for the federal government. However, the health care we have now is poor. The national health care could be better, and we could have better coverage. The state was poorly prepared. I give them an F. The state relies too much on sales tax and fuel tax, and with the closing of businesses during the last several months, the state has lost a lot of revenue. The state has not enacted proper regulation for internet sales and the sales tax issues. The state could have enacted fees or taxes on online purchases, which could help mom and pop local businesses retain customers instead of the huge amount of people who shop Amazon and others like them. The bag ban may have helped increase the spread of germs during the pandemic. My business was essential, so I stayed open in a medium capacity. However, I would not touch the payroll protection loans with a 10-foot pole. Too many fine print issues. I wish I had more time to share, but I'm too busy with an abundance of car repair work to do. That's Tim in Bloomfield. He owns an auto shop, and we appreciate that, Tim. So tough grade for New York State. That's an F from him, a C for the federal government. So let's talk about what Kelly and Kevin think could happen that would start to raise the grades. Kelly, you have pretty good words for New York State, B+. It's not an A. A little bit of room for improvement. From your perspective, mm-hmm. as we go through the winter, what can New York State do that would raise the grade for you?
I don't even know. I really don't know where they could start. I know that people are frustrated with the nitpickiness and the regulations. But if that's what needs to happen for us to stay safe, and they're not, you know, they're not going to kill my business. You know, people can still sit down and eat, and they can still come in and enjoy themselves, and we can do what we love to do. I do feel the person that just wrote in about the PPP, I did not take it in the beginning. I didn't take it until the second round. It did not fit my business. It was terrifying. I still don't trust that they're going to forgive any of the money that I spend on it. So I'm budgeting like I'm going to have to pay that back.
Well, explain a little bit more for listeners who haven't had to make that decision or aren't in your position. your biggest concerns with that?
The PPP I could talk about for about a half an hour. For the restaurant industry, it was not set up. Most of these loans and programs were not set up for our business. And our business runs different because of payroll. So our servers get tipped and get paid minimum wage, you know, the tip minimum wage, and our back of house get paid the higher than minimum wage. But for the PPP, everybody got paid the same. So in the restaurant industry, to take the PPP, you had to pay your servers their what they were making with tips. So at the time, we were only doing curbside. So our entire staff were doing the same job. And I would have had to pay my servers, some of them upwards of like $45 an hour, while my kitchen guys are making $15 and they're doing the exact same job. And to not even know if that was going to get forgiven, I was like, I'm not even dealing with it. We're running minimal staff. We're just going to keep moving forward.
All right. So on the federal side there, if that has been sort of a disaster, is there a better structure to reach businesses like yours? You say it's really not set up for businesses like yours, but would you redesign loans? Would you do something else entirely then on the federal side? I mean, Congress is debating the next round here. The president recently rejected what the Democrats put forward, and he said, we're not doing this until at least after the election, so we may not have a word for a while. But would you start from scratch, do something entirely differently?
What I would love to see is the removal of unemployment and increase the amount of money that all citizens are getting through the stimulus checks. If you could stay home and take care of your kids, which is normally what falls on us women, we take less hours at work. We leave our jobs. You know, a lot of kids are either virtual or partially virtual. There's not a lot of districts that are doing full in-school learning. But then you also have that bonus of, okay, well, I could take the stimulus check and I could work. And then my spouse can stay home, or I can afford to have somebody come to my home and help me with these services or take care of my children. I think that the unemployment itself is too limited. And it's not helping all of the people that are in the middle or the people that had to reduce their hours to reach what the needs of the pandemic are, whether it's in their business for us or in their home or in their workplace.
Okay, so that's how the feds could maybe start to make a change. What you describe sounds like a UBI, like a universal basic income. Which, you know, Kelly, many of us, probably me included, barely even knew what that term would have meant not that long ago. And now it feels like it's much more regularly discussed as an option. And we'll see. I mean, I think there's just about anything's possible, especially post-election, when it comes to what happens next from Washington. Kevin McCann gave New York State a lower grade than Kelly Metris did. Kevin's New York State grade was a C+. What can the state do now over the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months to raise that grade for you, Kevin?
Well, I think that the unemployment office should get their act together and in conjunction with the rest of the state government, figure out what they're going to be doing about unemployment insurance rates, get through the backlog of all of the cases that they have that, you know, I paid unemployment, people received unemployment benefits for me who should not have, some that I did receive paperwork from and disputed, and some that I never received paperwork from or for, excuse me. So, you know, if the state is going to be okay with that and they're going to just pay them to make sure that everybody is okay, and I would understand that decision, then I think that, you know, obviously there needs to be some kind of decision made as we approach the end of the calendar year here, end of the fiscal year, for business owners to know what they're getting into next year for their unemployment insurance rates. I think that they could have, and this is both a state and federal level scenario, and I agree with Colin on this one, which is, there should have been some level of thought put into rent and utility forgiveness, or as he was talking about, school loans and things of that nature. Because, you know, now that people are still unemployed and not receiving those extra benefits, that is a huge issue for people that waited weeks and months to get their first unemployment check. That was obviously an issue for a while. And yeah, the moratorium on evictions is up. So, you know, I know it's a stress that my staff are going through. I know it's a stress that we dealt with our landlord. And, you know, quite frankly, if a landlord isn't receiving any assistance themselves, then I can understand why, from a business perspective, they don't have any assistance to be able to give their tenant. But I think it puts all parties in a pretty awful position. Yeah.
What about
Can I jump in?
Oh, yeah. Please, Kelly, go ahead.
As Kevin was saying about unemployment, I don't think people realize that businesses pay into that, and that's based on your usage. So you can get your rate really low if you, you know, can dispute, you know, a good reason for firing every employee that you fire that tries to get on unemployment. But whether or not you had a good reason doesn't mean that they might not get it. So for a lot of our employees that were on it, you know, we fired them with good reason, but then they went to a different job. And the way the system works is you backdate. So whatever job you had before this is the job that pays it, no matter what. So we're on the hook for that. And then that affects our rate. They did mention not raising our rates next year. They haven't put anything, you know, legislatively up on that. But they have in the past been able to randomly charge businesses fees. That it doesn't look like your unemployment rate went up, but you may owe an extra $2,000 this year on your unemployment for this fee that got added on. So it's a lot trickier than the average person knows about.
Colin, how do you feel about universal basic income or more regular stimulus, just cash in the hands of Americans?
Well, I think that there's obviously the unemployment rate being as high as it is. I think that is probably essential to people not being evicted, to not becoming homeless, to not being able to feed their children or the rest of their family. I think that on some level, I agree with Kelly, you know, that the unemployment system, while important, wasn't necessarily the right tool to combat this pandemic, and that something closer to UBI certainly would have been easier for businesses to bring back staff when it was time to reopen, and not be, you know, struggling to get any resumes, any applications, anything to try to fill any position that you have.
Let me read from Charles, who owns Rochester Parkour, who's been on this program. He says, just an update. I've not been contacted by anyone from the state as I was told to expect, but we did finally receive some grant funding from the city of Rochester, so we'll only be in the red in our business a few thousand dollars this month as opposed to nearly $10K. Our pre-COVID business loan repayments have kicked back in, and our first PPP repayments will begin soon. Meanwhile, I'm still having trouble getting people to come back to classes, and many clients are still really irked by all the restrictions that we've been abiding by. I appreciate the necessity of these restrictions, but there remains little incentive to follow them when they lead to my business's bankruptcy. Our industry is being choked to death. I get that we don't have the same lobbyists that the restaurants or the brewers associations do, but we still matter. Please do something. That's from Charles. Does not sound like passing grades from Charles either, especially for New York State. Now, he did mention frustration with customers about restrictions, and I get that. I mean, I think I've really tried, as we kind of lead community conversations, to try to be empathetic to people who have been frustrated with new rules. Everybody kind of has bad moments, but I try not to shame. I mean, shaming doesn't generally actually change behavior. It just makes people feel more entrenched. But having said that, I do want to ask our guest, Kevin McCann. I'll start with you. How much complaining or resistant have you experienced with your customers when it comes to even the basics, things like masking?
As far as a lot of the restrictions, our business is set up to really almost act seamlessly with those, right? The only issue really has been the masking. And as a whole, our customers have been pretty great. You know, you'll get the person who, when they stand up to go get some ketchup, they forget that they don't have their mask on after they were sitting down already. And so we'll have to gently remind them. And in general, 90% of them say, oh, gosh, I'm sorry. And it's legitimate. Like, they did forget. But you do. You have the customers that have a poor understanding of what the mask is, how you're supposed to wear the mask and why. And, you know, maybe it's because they don't believe in it. Maybe it's because they're just sick to hell of having to do it. And so, you know, you do same way. You have gentle reminders. You ask them politely. But, you know, it's, again, just in general, you see that people having this pandemic fatigue and having to sort of gently encourage them to follow the rules while they're there. Because, you know, nobody wants anybody in the business, whether a customer or a staff member, to get sick. And, you know, if we have to do these simple things, you know, my staff does not mind whatsoever having to do all of our hourly cleaning tasks that get done. Nobody minds any of these things. So it's just, you know, like I said, I've said it several times on this show and elsewhere, reasonable steps, just reasonable, simple things to do to keep everybody safe.
What percentage, Kevin, of your customers wears the mask over the nose?
I would say 80%.
That's not great. I mean, that's one out of five. That's not great. But okay, the mask is over the nose. And again, I don't mean to be condescending, but mask has got to be over the nose. Kelly, how have you experienced?
The troubling part is you see these masks now that are being distributed that specifically have a dip where the nose is.
God.
So they're like actually designed to not go over the nose.
Do we even want to get through this? Kelly, I'm sorry. Did that come out? What have you experienced with your clientele, Kelly?
We get a little bit of everything. Most of our guests are amazing. I feel like a lot of people see the work we've done and the work that we're doing and appreciate that and feel comfortable with us. We do get some pushback. About a week and a half ago, my general manager was threatened. I had a guest that was physically stancing to her and swearing and about their freedoms and this and that. And she politely explained that she also has rights, and one of them is to ask him to leave.
Did he leave?
He did. But, you know, my general manager does not need to be getting almost physically threatened by a large man because he can't follow mandates for the safety of my staff. Because what people don't understand is you wearing a mask in the restaurant is for the safety of my staff. We're wearing masks for your safety, but you're wearing masks for their safety. And you get to take it off when you're at the table. So if you could at least just wear it when you're moving around, that would be great. I actually put up over 40 signs because people were having such a hard time remembering to wear it when they move. And at first I thought I was just being reactive, and I had multiple staff members thank me. And we ended up leaving them up. You know, I went home that night and my husband's like, we're going to have to take some of those down. And I was like, no, we're not. And the next day we got so many thanks from their staff that we just left them all up, and it's working okay. The other issue that we have, which I didn't foresee, is people expecting to be able to social distance from their reservation party. So you go to dinner with four people and you go to a table that's set for four people, but they want a table that's set for eight people so that they can socially distance. Well, I don't have space because I'm already at 50% capacity with 6 foot separation between all my tables. Mm-hmm. They are where they are and they don't move. Like, if my tables move, I lose another table. You know, and every table I have and a receipt I have is money. And that's how you budget in the restaurant, is covers per seat, right? And that's the same thing for parkour. You know, you've got your parkour space. That one group needs that whole space to participate in their class effectively Well, if you have half the amount of people in your class, you're going to need twice the amount of space. And to loop back really quick, that kind of goes to all of those things you were talking about in the end of the first half hour about creatively implementing new things in your business to achieve, you know, financial stability essentially in the winter. Well, that all takes money. And most of us are already scraping by.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, yeah, I just put giant gas industrial heaters on my patio. That's a lot of money, you know, and that's only going to save my patio seats for maybe another month. And that's money I had to come up with. So it's like, you know, you're talking about ways the state could help. Maybe that's a way that the state could help is businesses that are trying to find new space to utilize to be able to achieve their goals.
Well, we're essentially out of time. But, Kelly, it sounds like you do expect on the other end that Salinas and Knox, that you will survive this some way. I mean, is there any doubt in your mind about that?
There's always doubt. I own restaurants. But I'm hopeful, which is why I do it.
That's fair. Kevin McCann, is McCann's Local Meats going to come out the other end of this, you think?
Yeah, I think we'll be there.
Well, I don't want to take it for granted either. And that's why we want to have these conversations. And then when we have elected leaders on, we take these comments directly to them, and we'll do that soon. Kelly Metris, owner of Salinas Mexican Restaurant in Knox, good luck to you. This winter, this fall, this winter, and beyond, thank you very much for the perspective. Let's talk soon.
Thank you.
Kevin McCann, always good. Thank you very much. And damn, that's some good meat you've got there.
Thank you very much.
And our thanks to Colin Coffey from Renewing Massage as well here. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.